pause. Before you post that next job ad or bring on your next agent, hit pause. Most real estate team leaders skip the one thing that could save them time, money, and team morale: hiring with intention. In this episode, we are breaking down the biggest mistakes leaders make when building a team and how you can avoid hiring somebody who looks great on paper, but who, in practice, kills your culture. This is the Built to Scale podcast, where we share strategies and tactics to scale real estate teams. Hi, I'm Andy Fenstermaker, and I run Scale for Teams. We help real estate teams grow through scalable systems, strategies, and software.
All right. Hey, everyone. My name is Press McKissick, and I am the co-founder of Scale. And I work with real estate teams every day to help them be able to actually build a business and go from being an owner-operator to truly owning a business. So with that being said, Andy, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about common mistakes that leaders make when hiring. So before you look for one more agent, before you hire one more agent, watch this video. You know, we talked in a previous episode that we use the phrase hire fast. Hire slow, fire fast. Hire fast is the problem that a lot of agents and team owners make when they are building a team. So, can we talk a little bit about why that's a bad idea?
Yeah, let's do it. Well, I think hiring fast is not a good recipe when it comes to getting into business with talent. Talent, what I have learned about talent is they take time. And truly, like, you should spend the time on the front end to get to know whether someone is, and it's not that they're not talent, it's whether they're talent for the role that you have. And I think a lot of people hire Andy based on likability and not on behavior. We want the right fit in the right seat, right? We don't just want someone that we like. We don't just want someone that seems like someone I'd want to have lunch with. You can hire friends later, but we're talking about hiring for your business. So with that, I mean, you've got to look for the right fit. That takes time to go through many people and then ultimately, make sure that they're the right person to step onto the team and that they're going to drive the team forward.
You know, one thing that I've heard you say in the past, and I think this is very indicative of people who are just starting a team, is exactly what you're talking about. It's the people tied together with a credit card. And the way I've heard you phrase it is, hey, I'm cool, you're cool, let's work together. And I think that is like the epitome of hiring fast.
Be careful too, Andy, that a lot of people who start to hire, they make themselves the value. And you should now, sure, your leadership should be a piece of the value proposition of your organization, but it should not be the whole enchilada, as they say, right? Yeah. You've got to make it more about helping them reach their goals and the system that you've created to help them get there, the environment, the culture, and the tools, right, that you've put together to help them get there. It's not just you, your reputation, and what you know. Because the problem with that, Andy, is once they know what you know, what will they do?
They take it somewhere else.
That's right. Once they've learned what they know need to know from you, they're going to go somewhere else. So talent only leaves when they look up and there's no more opportunity, or the opportunity they want is yours and you're not willing to move. So that goes into expanding your vision, which that we'll definitely talk about on a future video.
100%. It's in the bank of episodes to create. So, but we're talking about hiring, and we already talked about hiring fast and some of the problems with that. But one big problem comes around cost. So let's talk real numbers or even just real concepts beyond the money. What does it actually cost a team when they make the wrong hire?
Can cost a lot. I mean, the data would tell you, if you go look up, like, what's the cost of a bad hire, right, on ChatGPT or something like that, it's going to tell you that the range is, I think, anywhere on the low end, Andy, like 30% of their salary or their income opportunity, all the way up to like 200%, which that's crazy to even think about. That's a huge number, right? Yeah. I would tell you maybe a little different answer. I would say if you're doing it right, you should know within 90 days. And so if for example, let's say you hire an administrative assistant to sort of as your first hire and you're looking to start to build leverage in your life, you will know if you're doing it right and you have accountability and you are giving them things, productive things that they need to do, within about 90 days, you should know whether you have the right individual or not in the right seat. And if you're not, then you should get out of business quick, right? That's why we say hire slow and get out of business fast. And so if you can figure that out in the first 90 days, then you are following the model on what it looks like to hire.
For sure, for sure. Beyond the monetary stuff, what does the cost look like? Because it's not just monetary.
Yeah, that's true. So I would say that the cost of a bad hire is it's a culture killer. It's a talent terminator. And it's a momentum eliminator. Like all those things are true. And nothing kills a great team faster than bringing the wrong people into that organization.
Yeah.
And you will, anytime you hear successful people who built big businesses talk, they will tell you about, they will likely talk about protecting the culture. And that is really true. I know a lot of teams who, and I think this is a great practice. As they start to build a team, they make part of the interview process, Andy, that people on the team are actually weighing in on that hire. And I think you need to be careful that you don't give full autonomy to the team to make hires, but you do give them a voice. And if you have talented people in your world and they're telling you red flags and things to be aware of, then you should think twice about whether you hire that person or not, because if they bring the wrong culture onto a well-oiled machine, it will dilute the result.
Yeah. It's funny that you talk about that. And to give a real-world case example, when I had a team, I had built this team from scratch. I mean, it was like three people, myself included, and then I built it up to about 6-7 people. Before ultimately going on to a different opportunity. And the one person that I struggled with constantly was the one person that I did not hire, that I did not have a say in hiring.
Interesting.
And so it goes beyond just like the leadership. It goes to just all of the other people, especially if you have a small team, because it's going to directly impact those people. At the smaller team level, if you think about it from like a percentages, one person who doesn't quite fit that culture can shift it dramatically, because it's just a sheer percentage. Like they make up a much larger part of the company than, you know, on a 5-person team than a 20-person team. So it's even more critical, I think, as at the smaller stage, but it's, that doesn't negate the importance of it at the larger stage.
Yeah, I mean, think about it like this. If you take poison, right, a small little pill of poison in your body, you know, your body's much larger than that poison is, but that poison will slowly take over all the good in your body and kill you, right? Like that same thing is true with the team. If you allow poison to join your team, that poison will, it'll poison the well, as they say, right? So you have to be really cautious when you choose and who you choose to bring on into your organization.
So that is a good transition point. So thinking about who you choose and all of that, let's kind of pivot to what team leaders and team owners should do before they even think about posting a job interview for another agent or another staff member or whatnot.
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's one of the things I talk with team leaders the most about. Like, why is the team the way it is? And what's funny is a lot of us are sort of just in go mode, that we don't actually have a well thought out plan. So here's what I would tell you to do. Take out a piece of paper, and I want you to, instead of figuring out what your team needs to look like, I at first want you to figure out what you want your life to look like. That's step number one. What do you want your life to look like? Now, based on that, you need to then figure out what you want your business to look like. Not your team, we're not there yet, your business. So it goes life, then business. What I mean by that is, in order to have the life that you've said that you want to live, how much money do you need to fund that life? That's your business, right? That tells you how much money you need to make. And then based on that, that will tell you, can I do that on my own? Do I want to do that on my own? Am I going to need to do that with and through other talented people based on the size of the amount of size of the life I want, the size of the amount of money I'll need to fund it? And then that then tells you what your team looks like. So I would say start there. And then the other piece is you got to understand how the strategy of building a team. I see so many people who want to go out and build a team and they think that I'll just go add salespeople. And wow, I'm like, this is the way Andy in there, it doesn't always come out this way, but in their head, I know this is how it works. Wow. I did, you know, 20, I did 20 million in production this year. If I just got five people who did 10 million in production, we'd do an extra 50 million in production and think of all the money I would make, right? That's the wrong way to go build a team, because what you, that is a quick way to, for you to become the admin, if there is not one, and for you to be trying to put all the pieces together, trying to manage people and lead people, whether they're the right fit or not, that's total chaos. So the better thing to do is the game I always say I love to play is, how do I buy back my time? That's the right way to build a team. So you look at what's the next natural thing that I need to give away that's the least dollar productive item on my list. And when you play that game, what you'll find is that you don't hire salespeople first. You actually increase your personal productivity through leveraging off the administrative tasks. So you're going to hire an admin first. Yeah. You might even hire a second admin before you even move to thinking about adding in a sales role or even a, you know, a lead generation role onto the team.
Yeah. And what I love about this is I'm just going to throw out there, the next episode, we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about the path for hiring, the hiring path, which I think is going to be a really great episode. So make sure to follow, like, subscribe. So Chris, how does role clarity or the lack thereof impact the success of new hires?
I mean, it's going to impact it a lot. Here's what I would tell you. You have to be clear before you make the hire. You need to be clear on what role you need next and how that role wins. I see this a lot, and we hire out of pain, and we're like, gosh, maybe I'm clear on I need to be able to sleep at night because right now I'm working till 11, 12, you know, at night, and then I'm getting back up at 6 a.m. and doing it all over again. And so I need some relief. So I know I need an administrative hire. So maybe you have clarity on that. However, you're hiring out of pain and you don't know how that person wins and what they actually do all day. So you hire someone and you don't set them up for success and you don't know how to judge whether they're doing a good job or not. And therefore you either hire, you know, you have a mediocre person or maybe you have a person who actually makes you, puts more on your plate because now you have someone that you need to talk to. Now you have someone that you need to direct around instead of them just taking ownership. So I think it's critically important. And what I would tell a team to do, Andy, is go shadow other teams. Like I would look for teams that aren't just a revolving door. And I would look for teams that are actually making a profit. And I would ask to shadow the person who's doing the job you're looking to hire. And I would talk to the rainmaker and ask, what does this role look like to you? What is winning in this role? The other thing I would tell you to do is listen to our podcasts and our videos, Andy, because we're going to continue to dive deep to help teams be able to build a scalable business where it's not all based on them, but it's actually based on the value that they can create and build something that's scalable.
The thing that comes to mind when you talk about knowing how that role wins is if you do happen to hire talent, that lack of clarity could just drive them right out the door. And I think I've seen that as well.
For sure. Absolutely. It's not uncommon for a real estate business owner to hire an administrative role. And even if they learned that they should hire slow, but then when the person joins, there's no plan after. There's no 90-day plan. There's no onboarding. You don't make them feel special when they come in. You don't give them special attention in that first 2 weeks, which they need, right? And make sure that you have a clear plan for them to go follow. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to do everything for them, but it does mean that you have to have a plan that they can follow and that you can check in on. And then you also have to give them permission to take ownership. I've seen so many team leaders who micromanage talent right out the door.
You touched on a key thing in there that I want to dive into next, which is onboarding. And we've talked about how a lot of teams approach onboarding with bubblegum and duct tape. That's the glue that holds their onboarding together. And not just that, it's scattershot. They've got some things over here. They've got some things over there. Maybe someone left something in a back room that they have to now dig out, which obviously takes a lot of time, but it also just emphasizes that bubblegum and duct tape component. What kind of onboarding separates high-performing teams from that?
Yeah, it's way different. Here's what I can tell you. Here's my philosophy on onboarding. I want you to write out, let's say that you're hiring someone in a sales role. I want you to bullet out what are the pieces of the business. We would call them, Andy, what you and I call them is your success path. What are the things that they have to know how to do in order to have great success in this role? So you might have a success path for a listing presentation. You're going to have a success path for a buyer presentation. You might have a success path for some of your key lead generation strategies that they're going to implement and do, right? There are a number of success paths that whether it's the first person you're hiring or the 50th person you're hiring, they need to know how to do these things in order to be really successful in the role. What I believe is that you should identify your success paths and then take those things and record them in a way that they are evergreen. Now, does that mean that things don't change over time? No, absolutely. And you would update it, right, if a major change happens. But here's what I can tell you. You probably do a listing presentation and you found a way that that works really well. And you've been using that strategy for probably a long time, right? You know what works well. You know how to go on a listing and take a listing. That can be duplicated and you can teach that skill set to someone else. And by the way, you already do. When you onboard them, you're spending time teaching them what to do. The difference is you're spending all the time teaching them to do it. So what I would teach you, my philosophy, is we need to systematize your onboarding and let's pull the success path pieces into a pre-recorded area, which Andy, speaking of what we do at scale, that's why we built the platform we built, because we built in a what's called a learning management system, which allows you to build for your team video content that's gated behind an online portal that your new hires would log into, and you can see how much of what they've watched. And it allows you to basically curate the experiences you want them to learn, what are the skills you want them to learn. And then what I would coach a team to do is to then test out of it. Someone has to watch the video on their time. That is them taking ownership of it. So it's no longer on you. It's now on them. And once they have mastery of it, they test out of it. That earns them the right to move to the next step or earns them the right to now take listings or take buyers or whatever it may be. That would be my philosophy on onboarding, Andy. And by the way, that is highly scalable. If you think about the amount of time that you spend with people trying to train them up, it's the number one thing I hear from teams who are frustrated, who are focused on hiring. Their frustration goes from frustration on the front end with finding talent to frustration on the back end with keeping that talent. They say, man, I spent all this time getting them to know what to do, and then they just left me. And so if you systematize it and you build it in to a portal like what we've built with Scale, now you have a duplicatable onboarding process that you can hire way more people in a month, and the impetus is on them to actually test out of the process.
And absolutely. And the way that I tell teams and guide teams that we work with in Scale is to don't think that they have to do it all up front. Like you don't have to build the entire process before you make that next hire. Take it piecemeal. what are the, if you have the structure and our platform provides a general rudimentary structure for teams for onboarding, what are the things that are easiest for you to tackle during your next hire?
Yep.
What does that look like? Well, why don't you sit down and film one or two of those items during that time? Or just set a goal of doing one per week. And they don't have to be long. They don't have to be drawn out. You don't have to be perfect. Again, this is internal stuff that, you know, you don't have to be super, super polished. The ums and ahs and likes don't matter as much as they would if you are sending it out to the world to see.
Yeah.
And Andy, I'd even say that if you're sending it out to the world to see, it doesn't matter that much either. You're getting into action, and that's what matters.
Yeah, that's right. I love your philosophy on that, because the coach in me would want to say, build out the, yes, to your point, do it over time, bite-sized pieces, but start with the most important videos first. However, I love your spin on that strategy, because what you're saying is do the easiest one first. And it kind of goes to, honestly, like I think of Dave Ramsey. Dave Ramsey would tell you in his, you know, in his program for you to eliminate debt, not to pay off the most important debt or the biggest debt. He tells you to pay off the least debt, because mm-hmm. he wants you to get a win, right? So whatever it takes, like the concept is bite-sized pieces, and it's done over time. But if you think about it, even if it took you 12 months of working a plan to get the key videos you needed, even if it just got you to 80%, think of how much more scalable your onboarding becomes when it's not all dependent on you spending, or someone on your staff spending, a significant amount of time every time you get a new hire. You just plug them in, and now you're moving from being a trainer to being a coach. And yeah. That is what you should do with onboarding. And what my favorite thing about all of it is, I put the ball in their court. It's, you know, and here's the thing about real estate. If you want to be successful in real estate, and this is probably true in any industry, any job, I need you to have ownership of it. It's your job. It's not my job. And if I put the ball in your court, then it's your job, right, to make the basket. It's your job to prove to me you know what to do to be able to graduate and move on to out of the onboarding process.
Yeah, absolutely. Two things come to mind, maybe three. First is, it doesn't always have to be the team owner doing all of this training, right? Some of it can fall to the director of ops. Some of it can fall to director of sales if you have people in those roles. And the second thing is, and I think you see this a lot with new leaders or with somebody where everything is falling on their shoulders, it seems like a burden to do the training and onboarding and stuff like that. And then thinking about, oh, now I have to turn and film something.
Yep.
But like, I've got to do the onboarding. I've got to be in charge of production and all of this stuff. It just seems like adding one more thing, but you have to shift your mindset there, because you're doing this one filming, and the next person who you bring in, you don't need to do that training anymore. The second
how much,
thing that,
how much time did you now buy back by precisely. Getting that one video done? A lot of time.
Mm-hmm. And the next piece that I think about when it comes to this is, if you're already feeling like you're that stretched thin, what pieces are you going to be skipping if you don't take this action? Because that's going to fall into the part of hiring out of pain. It's going to be rushing through stuff because you got to get back into focusing on production and doing the other things that you do as a leader. And so it's going to make your onboarding suffer regardless. So taking the time up front when you have a moment and devoting time in your schedule to take care of these things becomes all the more important as you're building that team. How can leaders shift from reactive hiring to more intentional team design?
Yeah, that's a great question. Again, I think starting with having an actual vision of your life and what you're trying to build, that helps. you know, I always tell the story. Early on in my wife and I getting into real estate, we went down to Houston and shadowed a mega team. And I remember sitting there, and he had this booklet, and he pulls out this booklet, and I'm asking him about his team and how big it is. He's got all these rooms, and I'm seeing all these people. I'm trying to kind of wrap my head around what I'm looking at. And so he pulls out his organizational chart, and he shows me where they are right now. And then I notice there's like more pages. And so then he starts flipping through the pages. He's like, oh yeah, this is our org chart next year. And he goes like 10 years, Andy, and shows me his next 10 years of where what his organizational chart looks like and the roles he will then need. We talked earlier, either this video or last video, I can't remember. One of the videos we talked about, you've got to spend time on the business and not just in it. If you want to get more personal about hiring, spend time working on the business and get clear on again, what are the roles you're going to need as you begin to grow, right? Naturally, you will transition from I need more admin to I need more sales, right? And then I might need to add in lead generation. And then it's playing the game of what's in order to, you know, it's think about it like stairs, Andy. You're either adding someone or you're stabilizing. After you add someone, you're stabilizing the business until you get to a growth mode again and you need to add someone in order to solve pain, right? Yeah. Or hit the next level. And that's the game you play. And you have to think of your business that way. So that means as a business owner, you've got to spend time on the business and not just in it.
Yeah, yeah. That kind of wraps up a lot of what we were looking to cover in this video. But were there any other elements that you wanted to add that I skipped over, or we didn't quite cover?
Yeah, and this might be good again for another conversation another time. I'm just going to challenge anyone who owns a team to not just focus on hiring people who are already looking to get out of the business. I want you to think of yourself like a coach of a professional team. You should think about who's the best player to take me to a championship. Who's the person that if I hired, no one would believe that they even joined our team because they're that good, they're that talented. Like, you be strategic about adding people to your team. It's not just about a number. It's about the right person to come onto the team to take it to the next level. And I think too many times we're hiring out of pain, or we think that the best hire has to come from inside the industry. And so I'm looking around, and the ones who want to join my team are the ones who are about to get out of the business. Sometimes that works. I won't say that never works. The teams that I see that do the best and scale to a level that is bigger and scale highly profitable, they don't care necessarily if the person's licensed or not. They care that they hire the right person for the role. Sometimes you may find a talented person in the industry, in your market, and they may fill that role. But they're not afraid to look outside of the industry to go find talent and bring them on their team. So think of yourself like a coach, like you're coaching a team. Bring on the best right person. Don't just bring on any able body who's looking for a team.
Yeah. And the one thing that as you're talking about that made me think of elevating the team as well. And so like if you think about where your team is now, and you're looking at all of these hires, where does that person fall in the chart? Like, are they a stronger performer? Do they perform at that level? Because you, at the very least, you want to hire at the same level, if not higher. Ideally higher in terms of production, in terms of productivity, if they're admin, capabilities, all that kind of stuff, what they bring to the team. So like you know, one thing that comes to mind, so maybe you have a team right now and you're like, you know, my EA just left. Well, maybe you need to shift your mind frame there, and rather than an EA, look for an executive partner, someone that can grow with your team. With that, we'll see you in the next episode. I'm going to circle back, have a couple things to say, and we'll catch you on the next one.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay, so hiring the wrong person doesn't just cost you money. It can drain momentum and poison culture and push away true talent. But with clarity, with strategy, and with a focus on long-term vision, you can build a team that actually moves your business forward. If you're serious about growing with intention, not just speed, stay tuned, because in the next episode, we're mapping out the exact path to build your team the right way from day one. Down in the description, you can grab our 3 team levels blueprint. Don't forget to like, subscribe, follow, all of that stuff here on YouTube, here on your podcast platform, and across social media, which all of which you'll find down in the links. We'll see you in the next episode.